I don't want a full-time job for a company again. My heart, my intuition, my passion is to just make videos.
Most of the people that are stuck in their jobs, they can't seem to find that opportunity where they can use their expertise.
Ask yourself, what can I do to make my full-time salary that's gonna just take less of my time? The only way to really grow an audience is to just provide value and allow people to learn things and teach them something that they wouldn't have otherwise known. The only way to get over this is to commit to consistency. So I said, I'm going to post 3 videos per week on YouTube, no matter what, for 1 year. Long term, I think it's gonna be different, where the AI is going to be so advanced that you won't be able to tell what's a human and what's AI.
How can you make yourself unique, and how do you stay consistent with it? All right, we're here with another podcast, and I have a very special guest with me. His name is Upton, but I always say I let the guest introduce himself. So it's a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. So my name is Upton, and I'm a creator and founder, originally from the United States, based now between Los Angeles and here in Dubai. And I make videos about tech, economics, and culture. I'm also the founder of Upton Media. We're a UGC content agency. So we make videos on Instagram and TikTok and LinkedIn for brands like Do, CityWalk, Sell Any Car. And it's been really amazing because there's been this huge appetite for brands to connect with their audience through more relatable videos, a little bit less polished, a little more human faces. So it's been really great, and I'm excited to be here with you.
Absolutely. How long have you been here in Dubai so far?
I moved to Dubai in 2021 in January, one-way ticket.
And so right after COVID or just the beginning?
Yeah, well, actually, that's an interesting question, because it was like most countries were still very shut down. And then the UAE, especially Dubai, was really starting to open its borders and see a lot of action and activities resume. And so it was amazing to come in the winter of 2021, where it was just such a breath of fresh air to see life is restarting. And it was an exciting time to be here.
I'm sure that during the COVID time, it was really hard to have your own business and be able to continue running that business, because a lot of businesses shut down during the COVID time.
I actually started as a creator in 2021, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to do this full time. I'm just going to like make videos and see if I can make it a living and a career. And I did. It was really cool. It was really exciting. But a couple months in, maybe 6 months in, I got a message on LinkedIn saying, hey, I've seen your videos and I would love for you to do videos for our company. We're a big tech company in the US. We'd love for you to make videos for us, not post it on your channels, just for us, for our YouTube, for our blog posts. And I said, yeah, let's do it. And all of a sudden, I was like, I need a scriptwriter, I need a producer, I need an editor, and I need an animator. And so I started to like assemble this kind of ad hoc team to do this. They wanted 50 videos, long videos. And so...
And what short span of time would that be?
The deadline wasn't super strict, but it was still 50 videos. And here I was, just kind of this creator. I had my editor and whatnot, but I needed to quickly figure out how the heck to make this happen. And so my company, my agency, was never really like, I always say my agency came to me through a LinkedIn message, because the project happened. I hired these people for this project and the project was really nice. And then all of a sudden more companies came and said, hey, we want this too. Or I would meet people in conferences and say, hey, your company needs this. Like, your videos are not that great. We can do better.
How do you assure that the people or the companies that you can do better for them? Because it's something like media is something that not everything is within your control, only maybe creating the videos or creating the content. But when it comes to the subject of reach, views, and being able to generate leads, it's entirely depending on the algorithm.
I'm a data guy, and I love the question, because I am a numbers guy. I love to make videos about economics, finance. I studied international business and finance. So I'll tell companies, for starters, if they're still writing blog posts and they're still doing static images, videos get 12 times more views than text and images combined. So for starters, let's get your content strategy to be much more centered around video than articles and images. Number two, videos with a face get 5 times more views than videos without. And there's a good chance that the company that I'm talking to is not using faces still. They're doing these beautiful animations or they're doing maybe long interviews, or maybe they're doing interviews with the CEO and throwing that on Instagram and YouTube and people are swiping away. So that's why I'm so confident to say we're going to do it better just by the fact that the data is supporting that. And then we'll add our creative touch to that.
Well, we'll get back into more about the business of media. Now, going back to the past, you as Upton, you started first time as a full-time journalist for CNBC. But then you transitioned to being a creator. Why did you transition from something that would be considered prestigious in the area of media?
Especially in the Middle Eastern world as well, Middle Eastern parents. So yeah, I was full-time journalist for CNBC and it was the pandemic and I actually got laid off. I lost my job. It was the heart of the pandemic and it was a dream job. I loved it. I was basically a YouTuber for CNBC, traveling around China and Singapore and Hong Kong. And then I was faced with this decision. All right, now what? I could either go and work in PR or work in tech. And I did. I started applying to Airbnb and Facebook. And then I realized, like, it was very interesting, actually, during 2020, because every time I would send an application in or email one of my contacts at one of these big tech companies and say, hey, like, are you hiring? I would feel in my gut this just, like, unease. And if I really investigated that, I was able to realize, like, I don't want a full-time job for a company again. My heart, my intuition, my passion is to just make videos. And even if that means making them for myself. And actually, it was a very exciting time, 2020, because we're seeing these things even since 2017, maybe, where as an individual, you can actually grow faster than a big company because people want to connect with a person. They don't necessarily want to connect with a big company or a big brand. So I kind of honored that intuition and said, you know what, I'm going to stop applying for jobs and I'm just going to make videos and see what happens. And so I did that. I just started making videos on my phone and I posted them on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. And it took a few months, but the growth started to happen. And eventually I had 500,000 followers and 1 million and enough to essentially become full time from the revenue from this.
Where did you start first? Which platform?
All of them.
Oh, so you started TikToks, Instagram, YouTube, everything.
Yes, I think it's the biggest misconception in the content creation industry of, you know, where should you start? It's whatever video you're making for YouTube that needs to also be posted on Instagram, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on TikTok, because nowadays the platforms have all kind of cloned each other. Even LinkedIn has...
They're all trying to have the reels type of
exactly.
Videos.
And this year LinkedIn just launched that as well, the last remaining platform. So I say whatever content, whatever video you're making, it should be posted across platform. Why would you just reserve that for one platform or two platforms when the potential to reach bigger audiences is free, right? And it just takes a couple minutes.
So when it comes to the videos themselves, what made you go into the subject of money, tech, and culture? You could have chosen anything. You could have been like the person who just travels overseas.
Yeah, I didn't want to be another travel vlogger. You know, there was so much good travel content out there and I didn't want to do that. I didn't think I could contribute that much newness to that niche. I've actually always been very interested in entrepreneurs, startups, business, tech. I studied international business. And when I joined CNBC, at first, I wasn't that excited. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to take this job offer. You know, it's stock market. It might feel a little dull at times. And then I had this realization that business news is sexy. It's Airbnb, it's Uber, it's Kareem. It's, you know, it's there's so much coolness around business and tech right now. I mean, really, for the past 10 years, right? The whole story of like, I don't want to go work in a corporate job. I want to work for myself or I want to be a founder or work for a startup. I mean, this is really exciting and it really is impacting and changing lives. And I think we saw that with something like, you know, Airbnb or Facebook. It's impacted lives so much. And when I was in Bali, I was talking to my driver and he's like, yeah, I used to work for a laundromat. And then I started driving on Uber. Now I'm my own tour guide. I basically get passengers on the top of my funnel through Uber. And then I become their tour guide. And he says, I met my wife on Facebook, you know? And it's like, when you think about the power that these tech companies have to transform lives, it's really exciting. And so to be able to cover a lot of these stories and how they relate to not just our wallets, but our personal lives, I think has been such a dream. So that's what I did for CNBC. And it's just been my passion ever since. And so when it came time to make my own videos, I was absolutely going to stay in that realm.
So when did you first taste that success, you could say? I mean, going back a little bit, it's not that easy. A lot of the content creators go into this route, but then end up stopping because maybe the fund isn't coming. You'll see a lot of people who are millions in followers and maybe a huge potential reach, but they are not getting anything back. They're just high and broke Instagram influencers.
A lot of people say, wow, you got a million followers after just a year or so. That's incredible. You know, you're so lucky. But the truth is, I had 4 years of experience at CNBC doing digital videos for them that helped me, right? I didn't just start filming myself and talking and blow up. So I think that's first and foremost is experience. It was years of experience that allowed me to start and kind of have an idea of what I wanted to do and what I was doing. And then number two is just creating value. I think a lot of times people want to make content for the sake of it, maybe to sell their product or sell their service or get famous. And in reality, the only way to really grow an audience is to just provide value and allow people to learn things and teach them something that they wouldn't have otherwise known. So that's it. I mean, it's like, how can I just bring value and to everything, every country I go, every like story I make, I try to ask myself, like, what is something that I can teach someone about this topic that they probably didn't know?
So how would you balance between maybe you have a business, you want to balance between adding value and also selling your business services or products?
Yeah, to be honest, I have not fully tapped into my 3 million followers in a way that I think, you know, other creators would have by now in terms of selling them something. And I think that's okay. I think that's okay. I've already figured out my business model enough to get, you know, brand deals and ad revenue that I don't feel that compelled to go say, use this product or buy this and here's my referral code. I think it's okay. Like, I think, you know, some might say it's a missed opportunity, but to be honest, I run a B2B agency, right? My B2B agency is not going to be relevant to 98% of my audience, maybe 99%. And so I don't want to talk a lot about, here's my company, here's what we can do, here's why you need us, right? If it's just going to be irrelevant. I think if anything, that's the dream, right? Is to be able to have your audience tell your stories, but not feel the need to like monetize all of them.
Mm. Well, within my content, it's about Dubai. So when I talk about Dubai, I can also sell services related to Dubai. As a person who adds a lot of value into sharing what you should know before even coming to Dubai. So it's very easy for me to reach outside overseas and talk about it. At the same time, be able to sell services about moving into Dubai. So the moment you move to Dubai, what do you need? You need a place to live. You need to set up your visa. You need to maybe set up your business or some sort of those things. So you need to have some type of service that can fulfill this for you, or you can do it by yourself. The chances are it will be much more hectic if you're doing it by yourself. So this is where it comes in. I, as a person who is born here and from here, who you can trust, and therefore I could provide the value. In addition to that, I also have government entities supporting me. Sponsorships with certain videos where I can promote certain activities or services or events that are happening in Dubai.
You're in a really unique position where the value you're creating with your videos align really nicely to the product or service. And I think you're an example of what people should be striving for when building their personal brand. And one thing I think, you know, how we're different is that I don't consider myself a personal brand. I consider myself more like, let me make videos about topics that interest me. And so for someone like you, and I think it creates a lot of opportunities for more people, for you, it's less about views, right? It's not imperative that this video gets a million views.
It's not about following the trends.
Yeah.
I'll try to make this type of information as entertaining as possible. But at the same time, it's what value I add to the specific niche of audience that want to know about Dubai.
Absolutely. And also, are you capturing the right audience, right?
Yes.
It's much better for you to get 50,000 views of people who are actually considering moving to Dubai than 2 million views of people in another country that would never consider that.
Absolutely. So going in, how do you manage to stay consistent with such numerous amounts of content that you have to develop in today's world? I mean, media is so saturated. It's just full of people, full of influencers, full of people giving the same type of information across different platforms. So how can you make yourself unique, and how do you stay consistent with that?
The first year, I realized my biggest challenge was that I was a journalist for CNBC and I could do videos for CNBC, and those videos would get millions of views on YouTube. Now I'm starting with zero subscribers, for instance, on YouTube.
Was it organic when you were getting it? And
Yes, yeah, it was. It was. And I was very, I knew it would be challenging, right? Because like my first, I knew my first, 50 videos were going to have 100 views, right? And so I was very proactive and conscious about this dilemma that I was about to face. So I said the only way to get over this is to commit to consistency. So I said, I'm going to post 3 videos per week on YouTube, no matter what, for 1 year. And then I can decide, is this right for me? Am I even enjoying it? Do I have a sizable audience? Am I, on the YouTube monetization program? But if I didn't make that rule for myself to wait a year before I assess and ask those questions, I of course would have given up. And there were many times I thought about giving up. I just put all my energy into this one video and it only has 355 views. Like, what am I doing here? And every time I would have that thought, I would tell myself, like, wait, take a deep breath. One, 3 videos per week, no matter what, for 1 year, then you can bring up these questions. Not that the questions were bad, but the timing was bad. And so I think I advise people to commit to consistency. Maybe it's 3 Instagram reels per week, but do it no matter what. No matter what, you're going to post those 3 videos per week. And then say, I'm going to do it for the next 6 months or till the end of the year or whatever. And then you can kind of assess if it's right for you. But so many people get out there and they post for 1 week, maybe 2. And then by week 3, 4, they're not seeing that gratification and that feedback loop of like viral videos and new customers. So they give up.
Did you ever have doubt that it will succeed?
Oh, lots, especially that first year. Even after that first year, I just started to enter the monetization programs for a lot of these apps. And I think I had maybe 450,000 followers, which is great, but it's not like life-changing, right? And I wasn't earning, enough income even after that first year to support my lifestyle. So
So how did you support yourself in the first year?
my first year, I did freelancing. I did like consulting because of my background as a journalist at CNBC. I was freelancing companies for their public relations and helping them get featured. And I didn't like it.
And how did you get those type of jobs, like to
Well,
support yourself?
I had a nice network from my time as a journalist. So actually, people would hit me up on LinkedIn, or I would start to be like, "Hey, do you have a PR strategy?" And it was, I didn't enjoy it at all. In fact, I hated it. But I could essentially earn what I was earning at CNBC by only doing, let's say, 10 to 20 hours per week versus 40 hours a week. And I think this is really good for people who are pivoting their careers. It's like, ask yourself, what can I make? What can I do to make my full-time salary that's going to just take less of my time? Maybe I need to go freelance or be a consultant or whatever, or be an instructor online. And so for me, that first year, year and a half, that's what I was doing. And one of the best moments of my career was when one of my clients said, "Hey, we really want to do another 6 months with you." And I said, "No." And they're like, "Please, like, why not? What do you mean?" And I said, "No." I said,
That's a good situation to be in.
it was the best situation to be in after I was just begging for their business a year earlier. And now I can not only say no, but I could say, "No, my time is going to be better spent on the content because I enjoy that and the revenue is better."
So this is what people usually struggle with. Most of the people that are stuck in their jobs, they can't seem to find that opportunity where they can use their expertise. It's a lot of different challenges for certain people when they want to just be able to use their expertise. They can't because there's no one actually reaching to them. So, how do you get people to reach to them? Or is it you have to reach out and see those people?
I think it's a mix. I think it's a mix. If someone wants to, let's say, leave their job and become their own brand, their own freelancer, their own coach, whatever it is, They need to start with the contacts they know. How can they reach out to them and leverage them? They need to use online tools like, let's say, Upwork or Fiverr or LinkedIn to post their availability and get more clients. And then the third is they need to be thinking about their personal brand. How can I be making videos on Instagram, on LinkedIn to attract that target audience? But you can't just focus on one. You have to do this full 360 marketing approach to get your name out there and ultimately get clients.
So discipline is the way. You would say.
Discipline, but yeah, and just seize the opportunity. Like if you can't like you have to appreciate that for the first time ever in history, you can find a client around the world and maybe sign them within a 5-minute Zoom call. I mean, like even 10 years ago, we didn't have this opportunity to meet a potential client on a Zoom call and close them. Like we're living in this crazy self-empowering time where the individual has so many opportunities to do whatever they want, to build the business they want, to get the clients they want. So yeah, definitely stay disciplined, commit to consistency and just leverage these tools. Another thing I see entrepreneurs early, like first-time entrepreneurs make is they spend so much time planning their website, maybe their, you know, polo shirts, their LinkedIn page and this and that. And they say, yeah, in 3 to 6 months, I'm going to start reaching out and try to find clients. That's not how it works. You got to start getting clients immediately, even if you're just freelancing for them on Upwork, because that's going to give you so much feedback on, are my rates where they should be? Am I enjoying this? Like, what are the pain points of my clients? How can I sell them better? Like, you need to start collecting all of that data immediately and simultaneously build up your brand, your website, things like that.
Don't wait for perfection.
Yes.
Start now.
Yeah. Done is better than perfect is a really good sticker I see some places.
Wonderful. So now, how do you keep up with the trends when it comes to money, tech, and culture? How do you keep, like, there's so many news out there. Are you following like a specific news outlet or something?
Yeah, there's no shortage of trends, right? I mean, between self-driving cars and AI and robotics, I think ultimately when it comes to like prioritizing which trends to cover, I like to go for things that will actually impact us kind of in the short term. So artificial intelligence is a really good example of that. Self-driving cars is a really good example of that. There's plenty of technology that is kind of more harder to comprehend, right? It's on the back end of things, or it's very B2B, or it's coming in 20 years. So I really try and focus on things where it's like, hey, you're used to driving with a human driver, but look what's happening in Abu Dhabi. Look what's happening in San Francisco. These are all self-driving, things like that.
You mentioned once that like you're the data guy. So you think about a lot about data analytics. How does that play with the role of what type of content you're going to create next? So how do you usually analyze your data and see, I'm going to create this content?
I'm actually very deliberate about that, because one thing I found is that you can drown yourself in data to the point where you don't want to make videos if you really overdo it. So like you can go on YouTube, and for those who make YouTube videos, they know every time you post a new video, you open up an app called YouTube Studio. And the first thing it says is, hey, this video is performing, you know, 10 out of 10 compared to your last 10 videos, or 1 out of 10, right? And so this can immediately become very toxic, right? It's like, I'm very excited to share my new video. Let me go see how it's performing, not just on the internet, but compared to myself. Like it's benchmarking me against my own self and telling me if it's 10 out of 10, like, wow, you're kind of not that smart. This was not a good idea. What were you thinking? Either your thumbnail's bad, or your headline is bad, or the whole video is just bad. So it can be very toxic. And so I think it's very important to be very deliberate and calculated with the data that you're taking in. So for me, just something as simple as, how many views did it get? How many comments did it get? How many shares did it get? I don't get too crazy into average watch time, percentage of followers versus non-followers. Like there's so much data that it can be beneficial to you, but I advise people not to dive too much into those numbers and just focus on like, hey, this video did really well because it got a million views. Maybe I'll do a part two. It's as simple as that.
So based on the topic and...
Largely based on the topic, but also the interest that I had doing it, right? Like if it was a video that went super viral, but I was kind of miserable doing it, or I didn't enjoy it, or I just didn't like the way it was edited or whatever, I'm not gonna do it again just for views, you know? So I think it has to be aligned with you and your authenticity whilst also getting good views and engagement. And if those two things match, like double down on that content, double down on that topic.
I usually view my Instagram as a business rather than me as a person, you know, coming there. So every topic that I talk, I'm trying to add value to the people. It's not about what I like to do or not. It's more about what the people need. So in your perspective, you don't view Upton, your social media platform, as a way of a business where like, okay, this is what the people want, so therefore I'm just going to create content in this.
Not really, no. I see it more as just whatever I'm kind of thinking about or feeling or finding super interesting that I also weigh into, like, will the average person on the internet find this interesting too? And then I'll do it. But I think for me, TikTok was kind of what got me there, because I've noticed on TikTok, authenticity is so important. You can't fake it. You can't come on there with a script and expect to go viral. People really want to feel like they're having a conversation one-on-one with you through this parasocial relationship. And that's kind of how I think of it.
So when it comes to content creation, I'm sure you heard about 1 billion summit that is happening in January 2025. What do you think is going to happen when it comes to content creation within Dubai as a whole? Based on that,
Dubai impresses me quite a bit, because in 2021 I met with the, you know, Visioneers New Media Academy, and I was just, my mind was blown by the fact that the government is putting all this investment into initiatives in terms of training creators and valuing the creator economy. There's not a city in the world where I've seen be more progressive in terms of understanding the significance of the creator economy. And that's evident through events like 1 Billion Summit. I think one trend we're going to see here in the region is more and more people get into the game. More and more people feel like, hey, I can do that. I want to be a food vlogger. I want to be a business vlogger. I think there's a good opportunity for more finance vloggers, for more accounting vloggers, for more people in the energy space who are making content about going to energy conferences. You know, I think there's really a lot of opportunities here. And I see it firsthand. I see it with the companies I'm working with. I see it with government entities, that they're very efficiently and effectively using social media to help spread awareness and connect with their target audience in ways that other cities and other government entities around the world are going to be doing in maybe 5 years.
Do you think AI will play a role in this, maybe in reducing the number of influencers, or somehow in the future where there will be AI avatars and they will be speaking on behalf of entities and therefore there's no longer need for influencers?
In the short term, in the next, say, 1 to 3 years, there's going to be actually a benefit to people like us, because we're human influencers. And because the social media is about to be flooded with avatars and AI influencers, there's going to be actually an eagerness for algorithms and humans to connect with other humans. Someone seeing you is going to be such a breath of fresh air, because the last two videos they just saw were AI avatars.
But how would they know? There's a point of that,
short term, right? Yeah, so that's why I said in the next 1 to 3 years, it's going to be really good for people like us. Long term, I think it's going to be different, where the AI is going to be so advanced that you won't be able to tell what's a human and what's AI. And so the significance of your likeness, which is essentially a big factor of why brands come to you and why people follow you, is going to be huge, because people know you, they like you, they want to watch you. You see my point? And so I think it's going to be a struggle for like a UGC creator who doesn't have a loyalty to their face, but it's going to be very, I think people like you and I are going to be pretty immune to an AI revolution.
Or maybe there'll be a replicas of us.
Or yeah, which will be even better for you, because then you can sit on the...
Then I can be in the beach and there'll be another guy of me. He's going to explain everything about Dubai.
Exactly.
Well, it's interesting about that. I'm not sure where exactly AI is going to take when it comes to content media, because I'm seeing the rapid growth of AI and it seems to impact a lot of the things. Images that used to be static is now moving and they can be transitioning to different things. You can see people actually move within that image. You can put a picture of you as an old person and a picture of you as a younger 10-year-old, and they'll be hugging each other through AI. It's just amazing how AI is going with. I'm not sure where is it going to go, honestly, but we'll see.
But I think it's going to be more important for people like you and I to do offline events, right? To have that physical handshake so that people know, hey, here you are, you're real. You know, I saw him at a conference. I met him at an event.
Personal branding will be something that is truly powerful. You being perhaps in the event, as you say, being in podcasts, I'm not sure AI is going to be in that level whereas we can have that very human-to-human interaction in the physical world. So something in the physical world that would prefer a human being to be in front of another human being.
I wanted to add one more point to that. You know, one of the reasons that I felt so confident to not make videos for CNBC but make them for myself was, like I said, people want to connect with a human.
Mm.
Everyone first joined Instagram, TikTok, Facebook to connect with a human, not to connect with a company, not to connect with a media brand or a news entity, right? They wanted to connect with another human, whether it was a friend or someone they feel like is their friend on the internet. And if you think about AI, as long as AI is not fully humanized yet, then I think it's not going to replace the humans.
So let's go into the topic of Dubai. How long, you said, you've been in Dubai so far? Since 2021, right?
Yes.
So with it being here in the Dubai, you've lived in multiple cities as well, I'm sure. You lived in New York?
New York, Hong Kong, Singapore.
Yeah, so a lot of different places. How would you compare Dubai to those cities?
In terms of, because there's a lot. I could go on for an hour about
that. I mean, in terms of living, just living there, how do you feel in terms of comfort, in terms of security, in terms of happiness? You as your own well-being.
I love the grit of New York and Hong Kong. I would say that it depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for a place that is very stable, that is very safe, that is very clean, that is very modern, Dubai is an incredible place to be because there's not a lot of variables, right? You're not going to have to worry about this big storm closing the bridge. You're not going to have to worry about insane traffic. You're not going to have to worry about safety issues. Because Dubai has grown so rapidly and the vision has been so big, I think it's really allowed it to become a city that is going to fulfill a lot of needs, right? So if you look at, let's say, Washington, D.C., where you and I both went, right, to university, Washington, D.C. was planned only after New York was planned. But a lot of things just don't make sense, right? From an urban planning standpoint, from a design standpoint, from a traffic standpoint. Versus Dubai, because they're kind of crafting it as we speak, they're able to really make better decisions that are going to ultimately enhance the quality of life and the standard of living. So I think Dubai is really a great place for people who are looking for a couple things. One, better safety, better conveniences, and also opportunities. One thing I love about this place is you go to dinner with some friends, someone brought in another friend, and all of a sudden, that becomes a personal and professional connection. They're talking to you about your business, and they're talking to you about their business, and they're ready to make a deal. Like, sometimes I've sat at a dinner where I've just met a friend of a friend, and like, we're sending the contracts before like bedtime that night. And it's just incredible. And you're not even looking for it, you know? And I think this mindset of bringing people together who maybe they weren't okay with the status quo in their home country is amazing, because you're getting a really amazing group of people who are ambitious, who believe in the future, and who are optimistic about the future.
I think this is something that is truly special within Dubai. You see people that are very ambitious. They're willing to come here to find the opportunities and succeed at it. That's something that is true.
And that's a huge thing I've noticed in terms of mindset in Dubai versus other countries. And in a lot of other countries, it's either, well, this is how we've done it in the past, so this is how we will continue to do it. Other places, like even the US, is more advanced than that. It's like, well, this is how we've done it in the past, but maybe we can do it differently in the future. Here in this city, I feel like it's very much like, this is what we did in the past, this is what we're doing now, so how are we going to do it differently tomorrow? And that is a really profound and cool place to be in terms of mindset and innovation.
So we talked about a little bit behind the scenes about digital nomad. Would you consider yourself as a digital nomad?
Yeah, I do. I do consider myself as a digital nomad. I'm location agnostic for the most part, so I can do my work from anywhere in the world, and that's a really cool feeling.
You've been in Bali just a few weeks ago, I would assume. Now, how would you compare being a digital nomad there, which is famous for it, and comparing to here in Dubai?
Yeah, it's so funny. Bali and Dubai have become like two great hubs for nomads. I meet a lot of people in Bali who are either coming from Dubai or going to Dubai. And it's funny because if you think about the environment, they're quite different, right? Bali is an island. It's a jungle environment. It's very underdeveloped, of course. And so it's like, well, why does it attract digital nomads? But I think the reason is because both places attract a community of people who were not okay with the status quo in their home country. And I think Bali attracts people who want to kind of get away from rigorous work and prioritize maybe more spiritual development and self-development through fitness, through yoga, through, you know, self-actualization.
I feel it's more laid back.
It's very laid back. It's very laid back. But having said that, I've also met some very, very dynamic entrepreneurs. Like I joined a co-working space and you'll meet someone on your left who runs, you know, the Amazon of the Netherlands, a $40 million company or something like that. Yeah. So it's also a misconception to think that everyone in Bali is just super zen and spiritual and, you know, against corporations and establishment. You meet a really good mix of people there. And I actually love combining Bali with Dubai because in Bali, I feel like I really can get to a more like holistic lifestyle where it's just everything is so optimized. Everything is so easy and convenient in terms of your fitness, your nutrition, and your community. In Dubai, I love pairing my digital nomad life with Dubai because in Dubai, that's where I'm able to like really elevate and grow as an entrepreneur, as a founder. I'm able to go to conferences and see like the most famous, you know, authors or tech founders or startups coming to speak here. I'm able to go to events with the World Economic Forum. And I think that's something that you don't get in Bali.
Yeah.
So I've even faced kind of dilemmas sometimes where I'm like, I should just spend more time in Bali and just hang out here all the time. And then the second I get back to Dubai, I, you know, instead of shorts, I'm wearing pants again. And it's like, instead of flip-flops, you're wearing shoes. And all of a sudden I go to a conference and I'm meeting with the head of this company from London and the head of that. And it's just so dynamic and the energy is so palpable that I'm like so happy to be back. And so I have this big love for both places as a digital nomad. And a lot of, it's so funny because a lot of my friends in Bali, they're from the UK or Australia, and they've been spending years as digital nomads and mostly going to Bali. A lot of them, I'm talking three or four just in the past few months, have said, hey, what's Dubai like? Hey, I want to come to Dubai. Hey, do you think I would like Dubai? And I'm very clear with them. I say, look, if you just come for a week, it's going to be hard to really tap into events and community. Book yourself an Airbnb for a good 1 or 2 months, or better yet, 3 or 4 months, especially when the weather's quite nice and there's a ton of...
Especially now.
Exactly.
Now. Yeah, for sure. If they come now, beginning of November, and they stay up till February, it's just amazing weather to be here in Dubai.
Exactly. And with that great weather comes a great community, great events, you know, conferences, things on the beach.
Everything happens just during the wintertime. So you'll see a lot of events just happening right now until beginning of January, for sure.
And I tell them that a lot of people don't know. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, I'm thinking of coming in July. I'm like, you could.
This is when it's everything is just quiet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but if you really want to experience the best time, you know, you got to consider this.
And they can have a happy new year right here in Dubai.
Ooh.
Going now into Between Digital Nomad, there's a fast-paced life here in Dubai. Compared to Bali, I think it's much more less pay, like take your time, try to do as much as you can with your business, but also enjoy the time that you have. Here, I feel there's a time rush, so you'll never have the time to rest, but have the time to perform. What's your perspective on that?
Everything is relative. So because I lived in both New York City and Hong Kong, I find Dubai quite, I won't say calm, but I find it a little bit more chill. Have you been to Hong Kong?
Yes.
Okay. So Hong Kong and New York City are two of the most dense cities in the world. You walk out your door and there's people, there's traffic, there's cars, there's taxis. It's a lot.
But I feel New York is even more busier than Hong Kong.
Really interesting. I think statistically speaking, Hong Kong is more dense. It just depends, I guess, the areas you're in. But I think we both agree, both cities are very chaotic. And so because I've lived in New York and Hong Kong, I come to Dubai and I find it just, you know, very zen, to be honest. But, you know, obviously, first and foremost, it's all relative to where you came from. I mean, even if you come from Cairo and you come to Dubai, I don't think you'll say it's a fast-paced city, right? So it all depends, A, where you come from, And B, what is your daily routine? For me, because I'm a creator and entrepreneur, I can afford to make my own schedule. But I do see my friends who have Monday through Fridays, you know, 9 to 5, and they have to be in an office every day. And for them, it can be exhausting commuting, you know, 10 times per week, right? Especially if you live far from your job. So I definitely can see that it can be seen as like a fast-paced city. But for me, I think it's great because you have all of the events and energy and nightlife that you want it to tap into that fast-pacedness. But then also there's places like you can go to a beach, you know, like you can go to a beach and swim at night, you know, just 5 minutes maybe from your apartment. And how great is that? And sometimes there are places where you're just walking around like kind of by yourself, you know. So there are places that can feel chaotic, that are quite dense. But then there's also places that are much more chill as well.
For sure. For sure. Now, going into specifically understanding you as a person, you've come here to Dubai, 2021, fresh, not knowing anything about it. How did you build up your business here? How did you go into reaching out to the people and trying to generate income for your business in order to survive here?
Jitex is actually a kind of a spiritual event for me now, because I was just realizing my first Jitex was 4 years ago, and I didn't know what it was. I joined F45 in downtown, and one of the coaches, we became friends, and he's like, oh, there's this tech event, we should go. So I was like, yeah, let's check it out. So we went, we just showed up and walked around, and it was really cool. And I was just kind of roaming around Jitex. That was 4 years ago. 3 years ago, I had just hired my COO, and we were walking around trying to pitch our services. And then 2 years ago, we actually had our own booth at our own exhibit at Expand North Star. I was giving a talk. And then this year, same thing. I was giving two talks. I had a booth. I had worked with, I think, 4 or 5 different companies for collaborations. So I kind of think about my Dubai entrepreneur success in terms of Jitex, just looking at year on year, how much I've been able to grow as a person, as an entrepreneur. In terms of how did I make it happen, a couple things. Number one is I joined In5, which is a great community for entrepreneurs. I advise a lot of people who are abroad looking where to start and how to incorporate their business to consider In5, because not only will you get your office space, it allowed me to sponsor up to 4 or 5 visas here, but also there's community. There's events all the time in the office spaces. There's multiple locations. So I think tapping into a community like that was really helpful. And then the second one is the importance of a handshake. I think the importance of a handshake in Dubai is more than in the US or Europe or when I lived in Hong Kong, because people want to know who they're working with. And one thing I found is when I was saying that example about just going out to dinner and you meet a friend of a friend and all of a sudden they want to do business with you, that is a very real thing. I was able to get due as a client just by going to Ripe Market, which is, you know, it's just a market. I was going on a Sunday and I met a friend of a friend, and all of a sudden things started rolling. And, you know, that to me is incredible. And so I think the importance of, like, there's some famous quotes like 90% of life is showing up. And I think in Dubai, it's 95% or 99%.
The question is, where do you show up? That's the thing.
Yeah, but that's the beauty, right? Like you might think, like, if I think about the biggest clients I was able to get in Dubai, I'm talking like massive companies. They actually, a lot of them weren't at big conferences in the VIP speakers lounge. It was at a networking event that someone said, hey, come with me tomorrow night. And I knew nothing about, or going to, you know, Ripe Market, or hey, you're just saying yes to things. And so to answer your question, where do you show up? It's like, I don't have an answer to that, because you never know where you can show up, where you're going to get your next big client.
And when you're showing up to those places, are you actually pitching yourself to them, or is it something that they just come to have interest in you based on what you were saying?
Look, you got to be smart about it. Like, you know, if I'm at a street festival, or, you know, Dubai Food Fest or something, in a casual environment with some friends, of course, I'm not pitching anyone. I'm just getting to know them on a casual basis. I think at the end of the day, we all want to do business with someone that we enjoy their company, someone we enjoy getting a coffee with, right? And so I think as long as you're authentic and creating that instant reaction and relationship with them, there's a good chance they're going to be like, wait, what do you do again? Maybe we should work together. Now, there are cases where I go to a networking event and I'm like, ooh, I would love to meet so-and-so. and the head of da 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 of this company, you know? And it's like I'm kind of scoping them out a little bit more. And when I do kind of meet them, I am pitching myself a little bit, but not in an overbearing way. It's more like, hey, nice to meet you. How's your night going? Something like that. Here's what I do. Yeah, I would love to chat. Maybe we can do a coffee next week.
So would you say, for the average person, what advice would you give it to him if he's just starting out as a creator? How would he go into reaching out and getting those brand deals, getting those entities to sign up with him, just to bring his presence into this?
Absolutely. I'd say, first of all, commit to a consistent posting schedule. If you can post one reel a day on, if you can post one video a day on Instagram and TikTok, that's great. But minimum 3 per week. You got to consistently make videos and create your workflow where you're going to be able to do it without stopping or getting overwhelmed. Every week, you got to post at least 3, ideally 7 videos. Simultaneously, start to think about companies that would want to work with you and that you would want to work with. DM them on Instagram. Go to their conferences. Go to their events. Start doing things that you think they may eventually want to pay you for. Meaning, do a video at that conference or at that event or about that company that is free, that you know, that you just cover it, because then you're going to become on the radar. And the other thing too, it's like you gotta have a plan in mind. A lot of people just start making videos without really thinking about who in a year from now, what company might actually pay me for a video like this. That's how they have to be thinking.
Would you agree that someone should do something for free if they were asked by the company?
100%, 100%. If it's going to get them to where they want to go, right? So I think absolutely, if they invite you to their, you know, to their exhibit at Jitex and say, why don't you come meet us? And if, you know, we'd love if you post a couple stories, absolutely say free, you know, don't, it's not about the money at the beginning, right? Like, it's about forming that relationship. And usually a company is much more likely to want to work with you if they know that it's something that you're naturally passionate about. Right. If you're just doing it for the money, they're less likely to want to work with you. But if you're going up to their exhibit at a conference because you're genuinely so interested and you're posting a couple stories, then they're very much likely going to want to work with you and pay you eventually down the line.
I did have some experiences where some companies were I did for them for free. They expect me to do more stuff for free. So how would you deal with that situation if you had a company that you did something out of goodwill?
Yeah.
But they try to take advantage of it.
Yeah. That's when you do need to establish boundaries. You know, you asked me the question in the sense that it's a risk. And I agree, it is a risk, but I think it's a risk worth taking one time, right? One time and also like manage expectations. So if they say, hey, we'd love for you to come to our event and we'd love for you to make an Instagram reel and a TikTok, maybe you say, listen, I'd love to come. I'll just do some stories, you know? So then they realize like, hey, the rest, it's something that they should pay for. So that's kind of one way I manage expectations too, with a potential new client, is I might go to their event if I'm excited about it. I will definitely post some stories, but I might not do like a full Instagram or TikTok or Facebook or YouTube, because that's something that absolutely, it is something that you're used to getting paid for and you should be paid for.
Let's go into the topics of money when it comes to content creation. How do you price yourself?
I think it's really important to get a manager that can do your negotiating, because it's your videos, it's your channel. Obviously, you're going to, you know, take everything a little bit personally, you know, whether up or down, right? And so that's one of the first things that I was able to leverage was a manager. To in anytime someone comes to me, I just give them to the manager, who will do the pricing, the negotiation, the deliverables and everything. And it's not just about the pricing, but even afterwards, it's like, okay, the video was shot, my manager will help becomes a producer and will help ultimately get that video delivered to them with their notes and our editor and all of that stuff.
So there's no way to specifically price yourself? No way.
Look, I think at the beginning of your creator journey, let the brand say the first number always, because you don't really know what your value is in the market, right? And you're probably just excited to get your first brand deal. I mean, aren't we all? It's like, wow, I got paid for my first video. So let them come up with the price. And if you want to negotiate a little bit, great. But for the most part, take it, do it, and be proud of yourself. Celebrate that you got your first brand deal. Then use that number that they gave you to price yourself in the market. So in the next phone call you get, what's your price? You can literally say flat out, hey, well, this company or this organization paid me this much, and this is what they got. Let me know what you think. What's your budget? Because I know money is hard for a lot of people to talk about. It can feel taboo and this and that. And that's why I think it's so important if you have the evidence that, well, this company paid me this, then there's nothing to be emotional about, right?
You have to speak to the other company, just telling them that you were proposed with this certain budget, therefore I'm not going to accept anything below. Like if you're having another company and he's saying like, you know, I'm gonna give you $500 as a budget. I'm like, well, my previous company just paid me $3,000 for this similar task.
Yeah.
So are you going to talk about that previous company to this person, or you just might as well just kindly decline and say that this is what doesn't fit actually?
Again, this is why I have a manager. This is a question that I would ask him myself. But I think, you know, if I were to give my two cents on that, I think that this is why sometimes it's better to say the first price, because then, you know, then they won't lowball you. Look, if they lowball you, and sometimes they do, right? Either they don't know, you know, your true value on the market and what you've been paid for. Maybe they have a smaller budget. Maybe, you know, whatever. It's going to happen. It's part of sales. It's part of negotiation. In that case, you have two options. You either counter, or three options. You either counter, you respectfully decline, or maybe you do it because you want to build a good rapport with them and they have six more events next year. And you could say, listen, normally my rate would be this, but I really want to work with you guys. So I'll say yes to this because I really am excited about your event. You know, you kind of do that good faith where it's like, look, first one's half off or whatever.
So going to the last two questions, one more question about this is that, should you deal with every brand in terms of getting their deal? If you like the price, should you deal with every brand?
No, absolutely not. You should only deal with brands that really align with you and I think what you stand for. I've definitely turned down, you know, some opportunities because I didn't like what they stand for, or I didn't believe in the product or the entity, right? So I think that's very important for, first and foremost, being able to sleep at night yourself. And then the second one is your audience. You got to think about your audience. There will be backlash if you are promoting something that they don't like or that they wouldn't use or that they don't believe in, you know, and don't do yourself the disservice of betraying them, right? They've made a decision to follow you and give you their time. So you want to maintain that trust.
Last but not least, how do you avoid burnout when it comes to running this business in the media world?
To avoid burnout is funny. So for me, what one thing I realized about avoiding burnout was there were times, if I think about the past year or two, where I did feel burnt out. What did I do? I actually opened up my laptop and I started editing like a TikTok vlog or something. And it sounds crazy, but to me, that is a testament to the fact that I genuinely, authentically love like making videos. For me, that was my, you know, yoga or surf session. It was like, go and make this like vlog that you really wanted to make that you didn't get to make yet.
So you still edit your own videos these days?
Maybe once in a while. Like I mean, some videos are just easier to edit, like especially on TikTok, that giving them to my editor. So no, there's, I mean, since I started in 2021, I hired an editor. I've always had at least one editor, but it just depends. Maybe 20% are edited by me and then 80% by the editor. So my point is, like, some of my videos, I'm just so excited about the storytelling behind that I will, you know, film, record, and then I'll just go in and edit it either on my phone or on my laptop, especially when I'm feeling burnt out, because it's a release for me. Like, I enjoy the creative juices that flow when I'm editing some of my own videos. And so for me, I'm a weird exception, I think, you know, because I genuinely just like love editing sometimes. Other things I do to avoid burnout is just maybe do a day of detox, like Sunday, you know, no making videos, no writing scripts, no editing, no talking to editors, like just a day of detox here and there. And then the other thing too is I've become very self-aware of when burnout hits me, because it has hit me, that now I try to be quite proactive in that if I know there's like a lot of content on my plate from a trip that I'm taking and I want to make like 40 vertical videos and three YouTubes, now I'm at a point where I'll say, you know what, I'm going to take 10 of these ideas and just X them out, and I'm not going to do them at all. Even though I really want to, even though I think they'll be really interesting, even though they might get a lot of views, doesn't matter. X them out, because I don't want to get to that point where I'm not enjoying this.
So I think we covered a lot of things. I just want to say to the audience here, how could they reach out to you exactly?
Yeah, I think Instagram is great. You know,
what is it? Can you?
Yeah, sure. Instagram is great at Upton. Connect with me there. Send me a DM. And then also, I love LinkedIn. So I'm also on LinkedIn. My name is Upton on LinkedIn, and I'm posting more and more about the creator economy, economics, and finance on LinkedIn. So love to connect.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, Upton. Thank you so much for being in the Dubai Catch podcast.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Thank you.